This is Cave Scott Allen of OTCode.com.
This is Kevin Dente.
This is John Galloway.
This is Scott Kuhn from LazyCoder.com.
Hello and welcome to Herding Code. This episode is being recorded on Wednesday, April 27th, 2011. Tonight we're talking to Joshua Arnold and to Jeremy Miller. Jeremy Miller is a repeat guest here on Herding Code. Is this your second or third show? Third?
It's at least the third, but one of those was the second, was a two-parter.
Exactly. So this is like your fourth or 20th or something. So Jeremy, according to your bio, if this is up to date, you're still chief software architect at Dovetail Software in Austin. And then Josh, you're also at Dovetail Software. Is that correct?
Not anymore.
All right.
I split ties not too long ago. Now I'm working at a company called Perioperative Logistics.
Okay. So do you guys want to, Jeremy, do you want to introduce yourself at all? I mean.
Oh, no, I'm still the same guy. Same guy. I'm the structure map guy, the Shade Tree developer blog, back when we all blogged. And now most of my time is sideline time. It's probably going into FUBU MVC.
Cool.
And I'm a former colleague of Josh here.
Awesome. Okay. And then Josh, you're new here. So do you want to introduce yourself a second?
Sure. I'm an architect over at Perioperative Logistics. We do a lot of healthcare and kind of lean management for hospitals. And obviously, this is my first time on Herding Code, but I'm a former colleague of Jeremy, and all of my free time is usually spent on FUBU.
Okay, awesome. So I just checked in with Jeremy today. He was saying a lot of stuff's going on with FUBU, and we've talked recently just saying we should do a kind of catching up with FUBU show. So before we dig into this, can you give us the elevator / Twitter pitch on what is FUBU MVC for those who haven't heard before?
All right. So the first question I think you guys probably want to make me answer is, does FUBU MVC deserve to exist? So we have ASP.NET MVC. It's got a lot of steam. It's got a lot of great community around it. I know I was really impressed with the turnout you guys had for MVC Conf this last time. So there's a lot of great stuff around it. FUBU MVC is a project that we started a couple years ago. We started it, kind of restarted it and jump-started it in December of 2009. We started our project at Dovetail about 3 years ago with the early versions of ASP.NET MVC. To some degree, we were unhappy with MVC and the architectural choices they had made. But more so, we thought there were some different approaches that we could take that would give us better results on our project. So if I were contrasting FUBU MVC as opposed to ASP.NET MVC, because we are definitely an alternative and a full-blown competitor, our advantages is much more focus on a compositional architecture start to finish, where MVC is inheritance-based. You know, that's a lot of highfalutin ivory tower architecture speak, but it makes it a lot easier for us to kind of handle extensibility scenarios and to make your code have less FUBU guts in it. I know one of the things I didn't like about MVC up front was I feel like MVC as a framework kind of intrudes into your code. It just kind of infiltrates every class. You know, I've got to return view results. I got to use attributes left and right. I have to inherit from this class, that class. It's all kind of locked up in this inheritance relationship. And we didn't like that. So with FUBU, we're trying to make you write much less code to feed the infrastructure, to feed the framework. We're going to rely a lot more on conventions. You know, things like if a controller action returns a string, and the name ends with HTML, we know that means return a string result, you know, and set the MIME type to HTML. But I'm not going to make you specify that. That's kind of silly. I can figure that out from the name of the method. Mm-hmm. And, beyond that, for Dovetail specific, and Josh, I know you're hitting this with your new job as well. We had some pretty extreme modularity and extensibility scenarios that we had to fulfill. So we've gone to the point of having a full-blown packaging or areas or slices model in FUBU MVC that we think goes way beyond anything in the ASP.NET MVC ecosystem. Josh, you want to talk about the diagnostics?
Yeah, I can definitely kind of add to what Jeremy said. So, on top of the conventional approach and the compositional approach that we take with FUBU, some of the the pitfalls that you can fall into when you start doing these composition and convention approaches is you have a lot of magic going on. The magic is controlled. The magic is very specific, but you really start to lose where you are. You can't see the forest or the trees. So we took the time to go through there and write a very, very advanced diagnostics piece, so you can always see exactly what's happening, and you can dive into details that you can't really do with any other framework. And that's really because of the approach that we have, architecturally speaking, with our semantic model. And that's kind of the driving force for FUBU.
Okay.
So take maybe a pretty common scenario I see from just observing MVC projects. You know, you have a lot of issues sometimes debugging routes. You know, what responds to this route? What's going to happen?
Right.
In a FUBU model, with the diagnostics package that's either the baseline diagnostics built into FUBU or the advanced diagnostics that Josh has built, you can see a full dashboard of every possible URL endpoint in the entire system. You can see what controller actions, maybe plural, respond to that endpoint. You can see what we call behaviors that'd be analogous to an MVC filter. You can see what views might be resolved. You can see everything about that request. So it makes a lot of things that are difficult or maybe difficult to troubleshoot in MVC are much simpler in FUBU because we have much more upfront kind of determination of what can happen and what will happen.
So when I start up a new FUBU project and I go to _ FUBU chains, I see kind of a list of what look like routes. So what's the difference between chains and routing, and are they similar, or what's a chain?
So you have, you know, X number of endpoints in the system, you know, a unique controller action URL combination. So any request that's handled, and we still use routing, at least for now, a route catches, and we create a single route for every possible behavior chain. Behavior chain for us is what we call the model of the things that are going to handle that particular request. So let's say you post a JSON message to a URL that's like cases/submit, some kind of message you're sending up. The behavior chain is going to model that I have at this route pattern that I just described and I already forgot, at this route pattern, I respond by, you know, first running an authorization behavior, then I might run a controller action that takes in an input model that you just sent. And at the time, it's smart enough to know, oh, this is a JSON. This was posted up as JSON. So I'm just going to serialize it or deserialize it and feed it into this controller action. And then a behavior finally at the very end of that chain that takes the output and serializes that back to JSON and writes it right back out to the output stream. So that whole chain of behaviors, you know, I do this, then I do that, then the inner thing does this. That's what we call a behavior chain. The difference between FUBU and all of the other competitors in the .NET space, not just MVC, but things like OpenRosta or NANCY, is that we have a configuration model where at the beginning of the app spinning up, we build this model of what routes are in the system, what behaviors are going to handle each route, and kind of that complete view of the world. And that gives us a lot of our benefits.
So you asked the question of, you know, what's a behavior chain? In order to answer that question, we really need to talk about what a behavior is. So a behavior is a particularly, you know, Jeremy said they're kind of an aug list of filters in ASP.NET and MVC. The primary difference is that, you know, we call it our Russian doll model. So essentially, you know, any behavior that participates in a chain kind of has a reference to the inner piece, the next behavior that needs to fire. And you have full control over the invocation of that chain. So if you're the outermost behavior, you can wrap the entire invocation of your request in a try-catch. Some of the use cases that we have for this is spinning up an Hibernate session, you know, creating our transaction boundaries and, you know, responding the way that we need to and making sure everything gets closed out properly. So a behavior chain is really the collection of those behaviors, and a route really just is a pointer to that particular behavior chain. And as Jeremy mentioned, you know, the actual rendering of a view is a behavior in FUBU.
Well, you know, it's probably good to note here for anybody who's getting too scared off, this whole behavior chain thing, it's mostly an internal detail. It's not something you're going to have to deal with on a daily basis. But if you're going to get in and you're going to build your own FUBU conventions, or you want to take advantage of composing your pipeline. You know, the kind of things you might do where you might have you might pull a behavior off for validation. So you can share a lot more logic without duplicating things in controller actions or getting into nasty inheritance kind of chains. But this behavior chain, the model and then the runtime model, that's what kind of gives us the ability to do a lot of the conventional work we do. Things like saying, all right, go look, this is something we do. Go look for every action on one of our CRUD controllers. Now, we've got a common interface that would mark it as this is a CRUD controller. Go find every create method and automatically attach an authorization rule to it. That is, you have to have the create colon whatever the entity name is. So without having to go explicitly say it's this role, this role, this role on all those inputs, I can write our own authorization kind of convention. It's dovetail specific. It's not something I'm going to bake into the FUBU itself. But you, as you're working on a FUBU project and you start to come up with your own project conventions, you can kind of work directly against this behavior graph of these behavior chains at configuration time, and you can bake your policies and conventions in and let FUBU enforce it for you. So you can do much less work yourself, even to the point of we generally derive our routes and URL patterns from the signature of a controller action. You know, use the method name, maybe use the namespace, maybe, but just let it derive. So I don't have to go around and put in a bunch of attributes or fluent interface kind of calls to attach URLs to controller actions and views.
Okay. And this is kind of micro here at this point, but you, as you're mentioning routing, how do you define a custom route? Like, let's say I want to break a convention and I want to point a specific URL at a specific action or something.
Sure. So you get a couple different ways. You can either get into something we call the FUBU registry. It acts much like a registry does in StructureMap or the class map does in Fluent and Hibernate, if you're familiar with those. I can go in and I can say route, you know, parentheses, this URL pattern, you know, and I can put substitutions in for route things, calls this controller action, you know, and I would do it with generics and lambda expressions. So it's that static type checked reflection. That's one way. Or I can do it cheesy. You can just go throw an attribute on the controller action itself. You know, attributes are still great for exceptions. Now, the cool thing about this, something that FUBU does I haven't seen in other .NET solutions, the way we handle URL resolution. You know, again, we have this whole model we create up front of this is the stuff that's in the system. This is everything that's possible. So we can use that model to resolve URLs for input messages or for controller actions. So all the way through a system, let's say you start with whatever dumb convention that FUBU starts with, you know, and it determines the URL is going to be this. So everywhere in your code for this particular controller action, if you need to refer to the URL for that, you get it by saying, give me the URL for this type and then X lambda operator X dot method name. All right. Mm-hmm. That's the way we tell you, or we try to encourage you to get URLs. Now, later on, you say, oh, I want hackable URLs, or I want a prettier URL. You can very quietly go into that controller action, throw in an attribute, and make that URL be whatever you want it to be, and you won't break anything in the code, because everything is just going to flow right through. You never have to know the exact URL pattern except in the one place.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And, you know, one of the ways to think about how URLs are done in FUBU, and, you know, maybe there's a way to do this in MSNBC that I'm you know, just not familiar with, but really you kind of work backwards. So rather than planning out your routes first and looking at the controller actions and making sure your namespaces and you're using the right controllers to form that URL, you're really creating your controller actions first. And as Jeremy pointed out, you know, we have this configuration model that says, here's everything in the system. And you can do that to the FUBU registry. You can do that as an attribute on your controller action. And you can also turn around and say, give me all the controller actions that I have available to me, and let me apply what we call an IURL policy. So you have a chance to say that, you know, it's a very simple interface. It's kind of a policy pattern that says, I match this action call, and if it matches, then I get a chance to build up my route definition myself. So that's where we take advantage of things like, you know, maybe I have an open generic create entity of T. So, you know, I'll close that and create a controller action for all the entities in my system. Then I can create a URL policy that looks at the, you know, the actual entity that's being closed on, like a case or a project. So I can turn around and pluralize that entity and say cases slash create, project slash create, so on and so forth.
Okay. I see. So you're kind of defining a policy rather than just mapping strings to methods.
Absolutely. Okay.
Yeah.
Go
ahead.
Oh, no, I think that's a big deal. It's a way to keep people using FUBU from falling into, you know, little mismatch mistakes and magic string kind of mistakes you could get into otherwise.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's something that I remember you pointed out when we talked the first time was that you, like, one of the strong opinions of FUBU MVC was in strong typing and avoiding strings as much as possible. Is that still kind of a focus?
Oh, absolutely. This is every bit a .NET project, and we're trying to use the strengths of specifically of C# and .NET. We're not trying to make a faithful copy of an existing Ruby framework. So one of my little pet theories, you know, right now with how much attention, and probably rightfully so, that things like Ruby on Rails or Django gets is maybe we just haven't thought enough about how best to be productive with static type language. So as much as possible inside of FUBUC, we're trying to use the strengths of static typing instead of fighting against it or trying to imitate dynamic stuff. So yeah, using lambda expressions to hook up on things, using type definitions and reflections to make inferences on naming or you know, even things on conventions. You know, take this great example of I need to display a property value that just happens to be a date. You know, when I say display for and then give it the property on the view model I'm trying to display, you know, I have all this strong metadata and information from the .NET type system. I can see that it's a date time. So in our project, we can set a convention. Oh, the way I display a date time is I always assume that it's stored in GMT time. So I'm going to go look at whatever the user says their current time zone is. I'm going to convert it to their local time zone, and then I'm going to make sure I format it in this exact way. If the property name ends with time, I know that I display it with the full time. If it's just called contract date, I show a short date, but always converted to their local time zone. That's kind of a great way that I think that we can take advantage of the type system, you know, rather than just going straight to dynamic or really just going straight to a Ruby-esque solution.
Right. So one of the things when you're working with a very convention-centric system is you really kind of, it all works until it doesn't, and then you're stuck. Like, why isn't this time displaying as a time? And you know what I mean? And you want to kind of look into what's going on. And you'd mentioned earlier that, and Josh, you'd spoken a little bit about diagnostics. I'm wondering, is that something where this helps out?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, going back to Jeremy's example of display for, you know, contract date. So if we have all these magic conventions describing how exactly that's going to work, how do you figure out when it's not going to work? So sure, you can test your conventions, and they are extremely testable. You can do a lot, but at some point you really just get confused, you get lost. So the part of the diagnostics work was to help you kind of see into exactly what you have. We have the information, we have the metadata, so we can really project a lot of that information for you. So currently, right now, the advanced diagnostics package, which I'll talk about more later, it doesn't have the HTML conventions yet, but the current FUBU stuff does. So when you boot up the app and you go to _FUBU, you have a chance to go look at your HTML conventions and look at them by model and get a chance to see exactly what's going to spit out. So that's really our way to say, okay, this particular property, when it gets displayed, what's it going to look like? So you can see for yourself, oh, hey, this isn't going to match, or I don't know why it's not matching. So we're working hard to inject a little bit more information about why it's matching. So if you say, you know, this convention applies when the property name ends in date, well, you're going to clearly see that when you actually project out that particular convention, you're going to see why it's spitting out that way and what class and what convention was responsible for doing that.
So another thing that we can do with our diagnostics, you know, the convention magic is a definite problem. And I know I've heard this from the very early days of Rails. You know, figuring out why it did something is hard. I mean, like one of the things we can do is in the diagnostics, you can drill into a single endpoint, a single behavior chain, and you can kind of get a detailed report of, you know, this is everything that's in the chain. But part of that is a log file that'll show you, hey, this convention looked at it, and I couldn't find any views that matched this action call, so I didn't attach a view. You know, this is kind of up to us as we build conventions, and there's a lot of conventions that are just built into FUBU, but we have a facility to log why did a convention do something. You know, it's a work in progress, but it's already a start and a beginning.
So Glimpse has been really popular lately. That was and kind of came out at the Open Source Fest at Mix. So two things I was thinking with that. One is Jeremy had earlier mentioned that, you know, some of the diagnostics kind of blows away what's in Glimpse, which is big because Glimpse really kind of was pretty breathtaking to me. Two is I was wondering, you know, after comparing, but I'm wondering how, like Glimpse, the developers told me that one of the things that they designed it for was that it just displays JSON. And so they said, you know, it could, there's nothing really ASP.NET specific about this. It could work with PHP, it could work with Rails, could work with whatever. And so I'm wondering if you guys had looked at that at all as, you know, FUBU spit out the right JSON. And it didn't look like it was very complex, you know, just spit out JSON, then it would, you could integrate with Glimpse as well. I wondered if you looked at that.
We haven't yet. Coincidentally, we've had an effort underway for a little while, for a couple months, mostly Josh, a little bit me, what we're calling the Advanced Diagnostics Package. We think that we're going to provide a large superset of what Glimpse does. What we can do, we're doing the same kind of request tracing. And actually, I think OpenRosta's got an effort to do the exact same thing all at the same time. So we have like an ELMA / Fiddler view, a lot like Glimpse does, where you can see, you know, these are the last 50 requests or whatever you set your threshold to be, you know, with some kind of color coding. This failed, this didn't. As you drill into it, though, we've had request tracing in FUBU for quite a while. What our big advantage over Glimpse is the framework itself does the request tracing. So we can give you a much, much more contextual information. We can give you a full report of all the behaviors that ran. We can give you a visualization of the authorization rules that fired, what they returned. It'll show you the model binding report. You know, did it pull a value out of routing, a routing parameter? Did it pull it out of the form, query string, if you're going to get crazy with that? It'll visualize everything that FUBU's doing inside. And I think that's going to give you much more insight into what's going on inside of a request, especially if a request is failing. And that's because the FUBU infrastructure, it's kind of designed for this kind of scenario, where the Glimpse guys didn't have as much insight into the runtime of MVC.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the other big motivations for the diagnostics pieces is, you know, historically, I know I've done it and I know Jeremy's done it in his projects. We use diagnostics as kind of a dashboard for the dev team. So you have Dovetail specific things. You have, you know, very project specific pieces that can get plugged into diagnostics. They can show you things like, what do I have in my structure map container? You know, what permissions exist in my system? You know, things that are really just going to be dev related tasks. So part of the diagnostics pieces in the advanced package is extremely pluggable. Every visualizer that we have, you can substitute. You can add more. If you have very specific behaviors that are firing, you have a chance to go in there and highlight them. You have a chance to really, you know, pinpoint particular areas of failure or highlight things that are going to be important to you for troubleshooting. And I think that's a very, very big and non-trivial piece for things like Ajax-heavy applications. If you're doing JQ grid things, if you're doing anything that's really posting behind the scenes, you don't want to be just sitting there with Firebug and hoping that you're going to catch something over the response that gets sent back. You want a chance to see exactly what happened, and you want to do it in production as well. Or not, maybe not production, but a more of a user acceptance testing scenario.
Yeah, I think the request tracing is a huge deal. I know it's something we've used in the past to troubleshoot things. You know, but beyond that, we also have that static visualizer in Explorer. You know, we've talked about the chain preview, but you know, we have this idea of the route explorer now, where you can look, these are all the inputs in my system, and you can start to sort them, you can page them, you can query them based on, you know, show me anything that has this in the URL, filter by the controller class, method name, what has security, what doesn't have any authorization routes, what would have this filter, what's responded to JSON, any possible thing we think that we would have needed to troubleshoot a system, you can explore. And that's really huge when we get into the packaging discussion here in a minute.
Do you want to jump into packaging now?
Sure. Josh, you want to go first on that one?
I'll let you go first.
All right. About 18 months ago, Drew Sellers of Mass Transit and Top Shelf fame, you know, was calling me, "Hey, Jeremy, I've got this great idea. I'm going to call it Bottles." And what Drew more or less wanted to do was to create a new packaging kind of technology geared around deployment for .NET. It's an equivalent to jars in Java. Not sure if that's a good thing or not. But his idea was, say you have a running application. You know, for us, it was going to be FUBU. For him, it would be Top Shelf or Mass Transit. I drop a zip file or, you know, a package file in a known place, and the application just sucks it up and applies whatever's inside of it, right? So we had a need for something like this at Dovetail. So we actually built this Bottles idea into FUBU MVC first. And now, conveniently enough, Drew just started with this about a month ago. And we're expanding it now, kind of lifting it out of FUBU and making it applicable to Top Shelf first. But so taking extensibility scenarios for us, we have a couple different web applications that are normally deployed, you know, one internally facing, one externally facing. There's a lot of common functionality, common controller actions, views, JavaScript things. So we take what we call the web core and we make it a package. It's a zip file that has that one assembly, but it also has view files, it has script files, it has content, images, has a lot of data, all kinds of other stuff. The Bottles infrastructure and what we're calling packaging is a little framework and infrastructure to be able to slurp those zip files or those packages up into the main application. So it's giving us, in effect, the ability to do what, you know, what other MVC frameworks might call areas or slices or even engine type effects. And these package files can include any possible thing that you can put into a FUBU application. You know, we've taken it farther into our customer specific extensions. You know, here I've just got a little list just to fill out some time. You know, I said we can bring in more endpoints, we can bring in more controller actions, we can bring in web forms or Spark views. You can apply policies from the outside. A package might add some, say you want to start instrumenting your application for performance. You can actually drop in a package that will add a new behavior to every chain just to measure the performance and record performance numbers. Or, you know, if I want to see, I want to record what features in the app are being used, I can actually drop a package in, drop a zip file into a known place, and that will get applied to, I could possibly apply it to every endpoint in the rest of the system. We can inject scripts into existing pages from outside. We have a content extension model, where we can inject customer-specific, like partial views into some of our existing views, so we don't have to fork our core code. We can put navigation items, authorization rules on existing pieces. You know, if a customer comes up with, and actually this has happened to us, what we call data restrictions. You know, forget role-based stuff. These users in North America can only look at sensitive cases if it's afternoon, you know, that kind of silly stuff your customers do. We can actually read that in from a package and have that applied to existing core pages without changing those pages. So it's been a very powerful thing for us, pretty highly advantageous. Josh, you're using it quite a bit too, aren't you?
Yeah, I am. You know, I used it quite a bit while I was at Dovetail, and now, you know, some of the new things that I'm working on, you know, really involve, you know, this particular customer wants 5 out of 10 features. They want, you know, a customized view of our application. they don't want to pay for these. Only these are going to be licensed. So rather than having these a really odd approach to handling the turning on and off of those particular areas of the application, it's as simple as, oh, okay, let me deploy this application with bottle X and bottle or package X and package Y. You know, it really becomes a great thing all across the board for your sales team, for your dev story, for deployment. And they're very isolated. And not only are they great in your application, you know, very specific to your product, you start talking about reusable packages as well. You know, one of the visions that we have is a reusable validation package that you can just drop in and you get a lot of stuff for free. So I think there's going to be probably a big move within the community, hopefully, as this gains some traction to start writing things that other people are going to use that are extensions to FUBU that can be consumed as a package. You know, a couple examples that we have of that already are the advanced diagnostics piece and Spark, and hopefully more to come.
Well, Josh, one that you left just in time to avoid this one. We're having to suddenly do some performance optimizations. And you know, one of the things we haven't done yet, we haven't gone to script minification or script combination, whatever the real term is for that. So I was kind of specking it out today. I'm pretty sure we're going to be able to write a package that could add, let's say it's going to be just the UE compression or the Yahoo compression engine. We may be able to allow you to kind of drop a package in that automatically minifies every script file that you try to embed in a page behind the scenes at runtime. Maybe even go so far as make it smart enough to, we have an idea of what we call script sets in our script management. You know, say that, okay, any script set, just combine those five things into a single thing behind the page. You know, I think this is the kind of thing we're trying to drive the FUBU ecosystem to, these kind of, I want to build a new FUBU application. I can start to pull in these packages and get these things for free just by dropping these bottle package files in the right place.
So when you're writing out these packages, are you following any kind of the NuGet or OpenWrap standard formats, or is it just that you kind of see where I'm going there? Can you package up these things in a NuGet-like speed, and so you can have maybe automatic updating since you're composing everything through IOC? Maybe you could, you know, so rather than having to I guess it'd still be kind of a redeployment, but if you had to update some component, say you had a bug fix for the minification or something, you could just, you know, run FUBU.update. It would update your packages?
Maybe. A lot of that's undetermined. What I've been trying to say, Bottles does absolutely not compete with NuGet or OpenWrap. I'm saying that it starts where NuGet or OpenWrap ends. You know, it's really all about deployment pieces and being able to suck up deployment pieces. To some degree, you know, if it's a FUBU, if it's a bottle that you built for your FUBU application, you can technically drop it right in where it's at. We store them underneath the bin directory for now. So it's not perfect. It would start it would spawn an application reboot, but at least it'll be as easy as copy that one zip file in. We've got an ongoing effort. Drew Sellers and I are kind of feverishly working at a kind of our Capistrano-like continuous delivery model, taking the bottles farther. And we're in the thick of things, so I don't know how that's going to sort out. But yeah, at some point in time, we'll figure out how we can leverage NuGet or OpenWrap to get some of this, maybe some auto-updating apps.
Right. I think, you know, where NuGet and OpenWrap get you are, you know, how do I work with my dependencies? Not how do I execute on the packages that I'm pulling in? And I think that's where we pick it up and let you, I mean, you have a chance to modify FUBU. You have a chance to modify StructureMap. And you have a chance to do pretty much anything and everything you can think of. I think we've come up with some pretty extreme cases and pretty crazy ideas. You know, we really haven't found the limitations yet, unless Jeremy has and I haven't noticed yet.
not yet. But we've been driven to this kind of crazy extensibility model. We've been driven to this by customers. We're not necessarily doing it for fun.
Well, I mean, and that's core, right? Like you're building all this based on customer requests. And I think for anyone building a framework, that's huge in order to build something usable, because otherwise you can get stuck building something that looks good on a whiteboard or sounds neat, but isn't really what you need.
No, I think you're right. I really do. In a lot of our, you know, we have a chance to start developing and really dog fooding the framework and sitting down after a month or sometimes even of a day and thinking, you know what, this is just a pain. You know, I don't want to work with it anymore. It really is getting in my way. And I think, you know, from the very beginning, FUBU's had kind of the motto of the framework that doesn't get in your way. So anytime we violate that, you know, we have a chance to sit down, reflect, and find a way to cut it out. So not only are we looking at it from customer-specific requests like packaging and extensibility, but we also have quite a few people, you know, using the framework and telling us, hey, it doesn't have to be this hard.
So where should we go next? Do you want to talk about, you know, the HTML UI Spark side? Do you want to talk about authorization?
Actually, can we do HTML conventions and authorization? That's the...
Sounds great.
Yeah, all right. Let's do it.
Okay. So HTML and Spark too, I'm interested in, you know, where you're at with Spark. I noticed when you do the basic walkthrough, it has you do add a web form view, and I'm sure that's not what you're doing normally in your day-to-day work, is it?
Oh, shamefully, we decided
I'll take that back.
3 years ago. Now, we decided 3 years ago to stay on web forms instead of Spark because customers could customize the view pages. And that's never turned out to be necessary, and we've regretted it ever since. Josh can come in with, you know, the haha, Simpson, we're on Spark.
Okay, so you're working on Spark now at this point?
Yeah, I am. And in fact, the projects that I was working on at Dovetail, you know, we kind of took some lessons learned from Jeremy's team and went the Spark route. I think at some point he was begging me not to go web form. So.
Okay.
This is where John jumps in and asks about supporting Razor.
Yeah, actually, you know, it's definitely on our radar to incorporate Razor. So. You know, we had a lot of Spark infrastructure in place, and, you know, it was working, and it was getting us where we needed it to go until packaging came. And packaging really threw us for a loop because now you had so many other things to worry about, and what we had just wasn't working. So how long ago, Jeremy? Probably about 3-4 weeks, I think, when we started the reboot.
Yeah, Alex and Jaime have just been running hard. We have a couple other contributors working really hard, redoing the Spark bits, looking really good, being much more, you know, kind of package friendly. You know, things like each package can have their own set of conventions about how Spark views are attached, and it's isolated. You know, hard stuff. But, you know, but where we're driving with this is once we get the new Spark bits in and they're stabilized, any Razor integration with FUBU will follow that kind of architecture as Spark. It's much more similar to Spark than web forms, you know. And there's some tricky problems for us with Razor because we like to depend on using the view model of a form as the key way that we like to match up views to controller actions. You know, not the only possible way, but so we got to figure out how to kind of infer about a Razor view and to see how we can look at a Razor view and figure out what namespace is it, what input model, you know, stuff like that. Razor and Spark in some ways weren't really built for some of the crazy stuff we try to do with FUBU. And it's not about, you know, Razor or Spark rendering a web page. It's about how we try to reason and infer what views go to what controller actions, because I don't want to embed view results in all my controller actions.
Right. So I think I derailed you a little bit. You wanted to talk about HTML conventions a little bit too, right?
Oh, sure. Sure. I know I've talked about this for in other places, MVC Conf and whatnot. You know, so we support the same kind of input for, display for, label for, you know, given a property and the input model. It's same kind of convention that I think MVC supports out of the box now, right? With you can specify user controls for types and stuff like
right.
that.
Right. Editor templates and display templates is what they.
Yeah. So. We are, it's a place where I think FUBU has a huge advantage on ASP.MVC, if you'll let me be cocky. Let me try to explain why. The FUBU MVC conventions work much differently. Instead of using a user control or any kind of templated view, I knew that we wanted to support a model of, you know, a basic builder, but also be able to pull in from something completely different, what we call modifiers. I want to be able to combine and kind of mix and match conventions. So, you know, think of a scenario of the baseline convention sees, oh, it's a string field. I edit this usually with the text box, right? Unless it's really huge and I switch to something fancier. Then I can have other policies. I can have like a validation / HTML convention set that I pull in from another library. And that can be smart enough to see, oh, I can read data annotations or the FUBU validation infrastructure, and I can find other elements, and I can start putting classes, add stuff to this tag model for jQuery validation integration, or control more look and feel. So instead of using user templates or user controls, there's another project that's related, that's part of the FUBU family called HTML tags. It's people ask me if it's similar to the tag builder, and I would say it's kind of a superset of the tag builder. It gives us a way to create an underlying model of what an HTML tag is. What's the tag name? What's the inner text? What are the classes, attributes, so on and so forth? So we can combine multiple conventions and work on this HTML tag. And then the cool thing that I know is a problem in MVC, because I've heard this feedback from other people, is I can take the HTML tag that comes out of my input for, or my label for, or my display for, and I can chain more methods to it. It's very jQuery-esque on purpose. And I can either override stuff that the convention did, or I can add things, or I can take things away from the tag. Your conventions always get you about 80% of the way there. And you always have to be able to break out of your conventions kind of on a case-by-case basis. The way we've done it, I think it makes it easier to reuse conventions across projects. And it gives you so much more ability to make those page-by-page, element-by-element kind of separation. And then I think the last thing I would do to compare and contrast it to the ASP.MVC approach, you know, they rely on, is it model metadata or is it metadata model, John?
Model metadata.
Okay. The model metadata, you know, the ASP.NET MVC conventions work by gathering a whole bunch of data up into this one single model metadata object that's pushed down to your controls. We don't do that in FUBU MVC. The little pieces of the conventions, whether it's all defined in one place, use reusable convention registry, what we call convention registries, pulled in from packages, whatnot. Every piece of the HTML conventions has access to, more or less, it has access to your IOC container if it needs it. So one way or another, either by being injected in or by grabbing it at request time, your HTML conventions can use any piece of your system to reason about how the HTML should be built up, you know, rather than depending on everything being gathered up into one place. So, you know, it enables us to create a reusable recipe for that kind of time zone localization. You try to display a date time. You pull in this reusable set of conventions. That reusable convention can be smart enough to, I'm going to go look for a service in the app that tells me what the current time zone should be. I'm going to look at something else that gives me the localization service for this app, and I can use that to create my HTML output without having to gather everything into a central spot. It makes it a lot easier for us to modularize and compose our conventions as well.
Okay. So we've got roughly like 5 more minutes. Is there something else you want to authorization?
Yeah, that's a big thing we played. So we got away with this. We went for a long time without putting any authorization into the system, right? And everybody at home is just, oh, no, you know, the world's going to end. We had to retrofit authorization everywhere. So what we have, we built authorization directly into this behavior chain behavior graph model. So we can specify any kind of authorization rules you can imagine. It's just an interface. When the interface fires, you're going to return yes, I don't know, or deny, right? So those authorization rules are attached to all of our behavior chains. And all that information is available to us at any time. So think of navigation elements in your UI. We have a lot of links where you're going to have to get in in most applications, you're going to have to put a lot of if-then branching logic, a lot of tag soup. If the user has this role, display this. If not. Does that sound familiar, guys?
Way too
familiar. Yeah, definitely.
All right. So we had to do, we were going to have to do a lot of that. And I, you know, this open closed ideal, I did not want to go through 200, 300 views and add all that stuff in there. Besides, I just despise tag soup. So in the HTML helpers in FUBU, when we do our equivalent of link for or form for, we can actually have it use the same logic it's using to find the URL to go from either this is the message I want to pass in, give me the URL, or I'm trying to get a link for this controller action, give me the URL. We extended our model so it can actually go and exercise the authorization rules that are applied to it. The same authorization rules that would be applied to give you the 403 if you tried to access it. And by tying into that, our HTML helper can be smart enough to just hide the HTML tag if you don't have authorization for it. So you think about that. For our navigation elements, now we can specify authorization rules later and it flows through our UI. So it automatically keeps our authorization rules in sync with what links and what menu items are showing up in the UI. And that's been huge for us. At the field level, you know, we got into a lot of this stuff where our customers had a lot of this logic where the such and such field isn't editable by these people. You know, we're very CRUD centric. We do a lot of edit in place, one field at a time kind of things. Mm-hmm. So we knew that we had, you know, degrading access rights where maybe the user didn't have editing rights. So we needed to turn a text box into just a span. Or maybe they didn't have any rights to see this at all. No rights if this condition's met. So just hide the whole thing. So we built something a little bit on top of our normal HTML conventions, the input for, label for, display for. Just these two little expressions that say show and edit. Show this property, edit this property. Where it'll show the full Chrome, you know, label and off to the right, just to the right of it, it'll show the editor piece or the display piece. We built field level access into the HTML conventions that did that so that just this normal edit and show that we were using anyway became smart enough. The edit, if it detected that, oh, the user only has read-only rights against this field, it could degrade itself to a display-only view without me getting in and changing, you know, field by field in 200, 300 views. I could just simply change, throw in more security rules or take them away depending on the customer and just let it flow through the HTML conventions. So we were able well, it seemed like a major headache and hassle at the time, but in very short order, we were able to retrofit a lot of authorization into our system without breaking into very many view pages.
Yeah, that's really cool. That's definitely something I've had to mess with in the past. And it is something you could with ASP.NET MVC, you could go into editor and display templates and you could write in branching logic. But like you're pointing out, you still have to write that branching logic. So that's really cool that just convention-based, that just flows through.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, since it flows through and Jeremy mentioned that, you know, you can do authorization after. You know, as long as you're using those helpers, that really ties into packaging as well. So if you're, you know, your one-off customer has a special package with a special authorization policy or rule, it's going to affect the rest of the views as well.
So what would be the difference? And I'm kind of asking, not rhetorically, I think I know the answer. What would be the difference between doing something like that where you have conventions that just change the display of, let's call them controls, for lack of a better term, or helpers on the show edit part? Versus restricting that at the action level or the actual method level where you can say, okay, so they're not, you know, these users are not allowed to call the edit, you know, method or the update method. Because it seems like that these conventions will work great for UI elements, but if you're trying to reuse these update methods to accept like JSON objects that are posted to them or XML, God help you, or any kind of other remoting scenario.
So, Scott, one of the things we've done in a few places where you know like a form element or a link is going to post, make an AJAX call up to an endpoint. Is that the kind of scenario you're talking about?
Yeah, where you're going to have the same kind of, you know, method handling both updates from the UI and from an API, let's say, or sure. from an import process?
So there's a low-level service inside of FUBU called Endpoint Service. Endpoint Service you can use to kind of query the whole, you know, give me the URL for this message I'm trying to send, or give me the URL for this controller action. That endpoint service will return back a little object called endpoint. It only has two properties, URL and do you have rights over this thing? So you can build your own HTML helpers for like command kind of things. You can build your own helpers that would do the same kind of show or hide. And that's all that the conventions use behind the scenes. Now, one thing we've done is where it's necessary or valuable is we might be doing one of these HTML helpers to make something else. And we know that this thing is only valid if you have rights over a certain endpoint in the system. So what we would do is, you know, whatever my helper blah, and it returns this HTML tag object. And we can do is say, we can chain off of that in a lot of places and say, requires access to something that keys into this desired endpoint. You know, we could say, you require access to this controller action. You can do it by roles too, but if you do it by controller action, it's going to do another check of go see whatever rules happen to be applied to this endpoint, you know, regardless of what those rules are or how they got there. And if those rules fail, I'm just not going to just render this HTML tag at all. That's kind of more of an exception case. That's like the 10 to 15% case, but we did that stuff too, and that helped as well.
So we're kind of at the end of the show here. I wondered if you could kind of run through, there's tons of stuff you sent me earlier, this huge list of highlights of what's in FUBU. Tried to get through a lot of them. Do you want to, you know, just kind of give a bullet list or talk about some other things and tell us where we can go to find out more?
Well, you know, to find out more, get to the GitHub page. You can blame Chad Myers for this, but look for a GitHub user called Darth FUBU MVC. That's the root organization, I guess, for FUBU MVC. We're putting the documentation there. So, John, you're putting me on the spot. We're going to try to have a beta release out by the time this thing posts. So the wiki page on Darth FUBU MVC, by that time, should have links to what will be a stellar getting started story. And we're going to get an automated warm-up story out of Nougat somehow that'll be really good by the time this posts.
So is there going to be a wizard? Can there be a wizard?
I can find a bitmap of a wizard, maybe.
Right. Well, and so we talked a little bit about that before the call, because already the NuGet there are NuGet packages out there for FUBU MVC, and there's also FUBU MVC.fastpack. And then I was saying, like, you know, be neat if there was like a FUBU MVC.sample or whatever. And it sounds like that's kind of what you're talking about here with the get started kind of app.
Well, yeah. So there's getting started, and then we know we need something like the Rails new or the Rails, you know, the magic command line Rails new app, and I got everything exactly the way I needed to get going. Mm-hmm. You know, ideally, by the time this posts, I'd like to be able to pull the beta version of the FUBU NuGet and have a working hello world up in about 10 minutes. And no, Scott Kuhn, there will be no designer surface.
Can't you just have a FUBU control that I can draw up onto my phone?
You know, and it's for tooling. I mean, this is the one place where I know we're not even in the ballpark with MVC. You know, we have not invested any at all with Visual Studio integration. I think we'll probably depend on command line tools. You know, we have an extensible command line tool, the FUBU XE, that we use for a lot of, you know, create package, put package in the right spot, run installers kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, maybe we're going to try to extend that. There's already work outstanding to create a good automated warm-up story.
Well, I wonder, too, you got Drew working with you. I wonder if you could get him to write up some, as part of your NuGet package, write up some scripts, too. Because that's like the they've got scaffolding for MVC3 now, and a lot of that is command line based. You know, rather than have to create a bunch of tooling, it's more just commands.
Oh yeah, absolutely, and it's definitely my thought. I don't want to get anywhere near Visual Studio extensibility. I think, you know, my thought, and we were kicking this around on Twitter tonight. I think we'll probably just try to use MVC scaffolding out of the box and change the T4.
Wow.
The templates will be, why not? The templates will be a lot simpler because it just takes less stuff to get a Fubu thing going. You know, Scott Kuhn's poking us on Skype about this. You know, honestly, the one single thing I would like to do is maybe just build a little resharper template that I want to right click on an input model, a view model, and just say, I want a view for this. I want a web form view or a Spark view. And whatever the ugly markup it is to get it to be a strong type view to that thing, just do it for me because I never remember how.
Cool. Okay. Well, as we wrap up here, then definitely that's something to look forward to when this is posted, and we'll have that in our show notes. Is there anything, any upcoming talks or anything else you'd like to, you know, tell our listeners about?
I don't know if Jeremy has anything planned. I'm still going to try my best to make it out to Monospace. You know, we've got a lot of interest by the Mono guys and a lot of work being done to make Fubu run on Mono pretty smoothly. So I'm going to try my best to make it out to that. You know, obviously we're going to have a big presence on at Pablo's Fiesta. Outside of that, you know, if anyone wants a talk, you know, I'm always available to do that. So if anyone wants to do a, you know, a Skype session or ping me on Twitter and talk some more Fubu, you know, I'm always open for that.
Okay. And when is Pablo's Fiesta?
Jeremy, is that September, I think?
It's either September or early October. It was, hey, you know what, guys, anybody who wants to come to a great open spaces event in Austin about the time it's starting to cool down, Pablo's Fiesta was great last year.
Yep.
Our Microsoft shills welcome. No, that sounds great. I'd love to get there. Cool. Okay. Should we wrap up there?
Yep.
Okay. Well, that's all the time we have this week. Thanks a bunch, both Josh and Jeremy.
Oh, thanks for having us on, guys.
Awesome. Okay. We'll catch you next time on Herding Code.